So have any of you ever been conned? Has that ever happened to anybody? Ever been tricked into buying things that you thought were one thing, but they were actually another? You know, and if people find out that you're a pastor, some local businesses, not all, but some, when they find out you're a pastor, they deliberately con you because they say they think you won't retaliate for it. And as someone said to me when that happened to me here, I won't say any names, Heather, don't worry. But they said that, you know, they found the wrong pastor, because that has happened to me several times here, and I can give you a list of businesses that have tried. But the interesting thing is it's gone on forever. And when I was a young pastor in my last church in Alexander, Iowa, I was driving a Chevy Citation, which some people really didn't like. I actually liked the car. But, you know, we had twins, and Diane thought it'd be good if she could have a car with a back seat big enough to have two car seats and herself in it to attend to the twins. So I went shopping for cars, and I was not about to buy a minivan. There's one car dealership in a nearby town of Belmont, Iowa, and it was a unique car dealership because it sold both new Chevys and new Fords, and they didn't even fight each other in the shop, you know. It's kind of a cool thing. And he had a couple of these big old used wagons there. This was a Mercury Colony Park. This isn't the one that I looked at, but it was one just like it. And I drove it, but I didn't like the way it sat. I didn't like the position of the steering wheel. So I instead opted for looking at this one. And I ended up buying it. It was a Chevy Caprice Classic Wagon. Really liked that car, you know. It had the 350 GM engine in it. It's pretty much a bulletproof engine. And lots of room, plenty of room, plenty of seating room in it. Had the little jump seat in the back and all those things that the traditional old, what they call freeway cruisers, had in them. And so I bought that car. Now, when I looked at it, it had brand new Firestone tires on it all the way around. And it's just something I check before I buy a used car. And one day I was driving it to Des Moines on Interstate 35. It was really fun going down the road in that car because it has ample power. It would have left that Citation in the dust any time of the week. All of a sudden it started to fishtail on me. You know, the back end was just going back and forth. I couldn't figure it out. It was about 40 miles from home, so I just kind of crawled home. And both rear tires had the radial cords broken in them. And I couldn't figure it out. And then I noticed they were not Firestone tires. The dealer had switched them out from the time I signed the sales thing to that. And of course, you know, not all car dealers are like that, but this one was. So I went back to him and complained, and he goes, no. He denied that he switched the tires. I said, well, are you going to make this right? And he put his arm around me. He said, son, we don't sell tires. And I said, two things. I am not your son. And if you want to keep that arm, move it. And then we had a departure. Now, I should have known it, but I didn't. So this week, when I was putting this together, I looked him up online, this car dealership. And it says permanently closed. So it does come back to you. But I was really angry because I expected more integrity from this old boy, you know. And anger is always a result of unmet expectations. I should have known. This guy was drunk at 10 o'clock in the morning when I was dealing with him. He came to church soup suppers and had to throw up in the middle of it because he was drinking so much. He was deeply flawed. It was really hard for me to accept that. I'm still not a very good judge of character. I get conned easily still all the time. I listen to the news and I realize there's a lot of conning going on. Sometimes I'm angry at God just for letting these people speak. Sometimes I'm angry at God just for letting these people live. I'm disgusted with it. I'm disgusted with their flaws. And then I look in the mirror and realize that I'm just as flawed as they are. And I'm grateful that in spite of my stupidity, my arrogance, and a host of other flaws, God still loves me. You know, and I came back from seminary to my hometown of Sioux Center one time. I was talking to an old boy there and say, you know, my goal is to become a professor, but I think I might try this pastor thing. Because there was a shortage of pastors at the time, and they were making it attractive. So I think I'm going to try that. He said, no, you'll never make it as a pastor because you like to party too much. Well, one of us was wrong there. But the thing is, the question I want us to consider today is, does God factor in our flaws when he calls us? Because it's really hard to accept the flaws of other people if those flaws are different than our flaws. If those flaws are the same as ours, it's much easier to accept them. But how do you deal with the fact, this has always been difficult for me, how do you deal with the fact that God is more willing to put up with our flaws than we are to put up with each other's flaws? That's always been a mystery to me. We're looking at some Old Testament characters. Today we're looking at Jacob. Next week we're going to look at Moses. We're jumping from Genesis to Exodus next week. And by the way, I'm taking that quite seriously, that if you all will let me, I'm going to turn you into Bible scholars. So just be aware of that. We have a Bible study coming up in about 6 weeks. We're going to start one on Wednesday nights on the Sermon on the Mount. But anyway, it is a mystery that God calls these Old Testament characters. Many of them were so unsavory. Abraham was a crook and a con artist himself. He had kids with a whole bunch of different women. David had a man killed after he got his wife pregnant. The man's wife, not his own wife. Solomon had hundreds of wives and concubines and still ran around. And many of them didn't think twice about raiding and stealing. What Solomon did would make the Vikings look wimpy. He did all kinds of nasty stuff that way. Most of these guys were dishonest. Now, the man who fathered the 12 tribes of Israel was exceedingly corrupt. His name was Jacob. And we're going to take a look at how he got along with God today. Just some background information. Jacob was the son of Isaac. Remember last week, Isaac was the guy that was almost sacrificed by Abraham. This would make him the grandson of Abraham. He had a twin brother named Esau. And the way the inheritance law was set up in those days is kind of interesting. If you were a woman, you didn't get anything. You had to depend on your husband's family. If you were the firstborn son, you were in pretty good shape. It's like, I have 3 daughters and 2 sons. So by Hebrew law, when I croak, my inheritance would be split 3 ways. And my oldest son would get 2 shares, and my youngest son would get 1 share. And my daughters are just out of luck. That was Hebrew law. So with these twins, Esau was born first, so he was going to get twice what Jacob would get. Even though they were twins, that counted. Of our twins, Jenny is 4 minutes older than Joey, but that makes her the firstborn. So that's how it is. You know, we were popping the kids out so fast in those days, I thought there's going to be more coming at that, you know, but Diane changed her mind and 2 was enough at that particular point. But, you know, it was an exciting time. So here we have twins. We don't know if they're 4 minutes apart or not. And if you can imagine giving birth without anesthetic or anything like that, and probably in the desert in a tent, that's kind of how that goes. But here's the opening dialogue of this story. One day, when Isaac was old and turning blind, he called for Esau, his older son, and said, "My son?" "Yes, father," Esau replied. "I'm an old man now," Isaac said, "and I don't know when I may die. Take your bow and a quiver full of arrows and go out in the open country to hunt some wild game for me. Prepare my favorite dish and bring it here for me to eat. Then I will pronounce the blessing that belongs to you, my firstborn son, before I die." See, and the blessing was the double inheritance. And what you know, even though Esau was entitled to this by law, his father still had to verbally consent to it, and that's what was happening here. Now, Esau was obviously a skilled hunter and a chef at the same time. He was good at that sort of thing, and he was kind of the manly man, and Jacob was kind of a mama's boy. And his mother, Rebekah, she favored Jacob over Esau. Like I said, he was the mama's boy, and Esau was the daddy's boy. So when she heard what Isaac said, she took action. She wanted Jacob to have the bigger part of the inheritance. So this is what happened. We're going to skip a few paragraphs ahead here. It says, then she took Esau's favorite clothes, which were there in the house, and gave them to her younger son, Jacob. She covered his arms and the smooth part of his neck with the skin of young goats. Then she gave Jacob the delicious meat, including freshly baked bread. So Jacob took the food to his father. My father, he said. Yes, my son, Isaac answered. Who are you, Esau or Jacob? See, so she cooked a goat. And of course, obviously, Jacob was in collusion with her. He was willing to do what she wanted. And he wore the goat skin on his arms because his arms weren't hairy. And his brothers were. So that's how that worked. Jacob replied, it's Esau, your firstborn son. I've done as you told me. Here's the wild game. Now sit up and eat it so you can give me your blessing. Isaac asked, how did you find it so quickly, my son? The Lord, your God, put it in my path, Jacob replied. And boy's filthy crook, isn't he? He assumed his brother's identity, and he lied about God. Really irritates me when people do that. I used to see that a lot more. You know, the Lord is telling me to do this, or the Lord is telling me to do that, which means don't argue with me because I really want to do this. But most of those folks have left the Reformed Church, so it's better today. Story goes on. Then Isaac said to Jacob, come closer so I can touch you and make sure that you're really Esau. So Jacob went closer to his father, and Isaac touched him. The voice is Jacob's, but the hands are Esau's, Isaac said. But he did not recognize Jacob because Jacob's hands felt hairy, just like Esau's. So Isaac prepared to bless Jacob. Now remember, Isaac's blind at this point. My mother is 93 years old. She's in a nursing home. She's 90% blind, and she has Alzheimer's. And I could have told her I was Donald Trump, and she would have believed me. You know, it's just that she doesn't have any power of recognizing or anything like that. Now, I think she recognized Diane, but I don't think she recognized me at all when we were there last. That's kind of the condition that Isaac was in here when Jacob is trying to swindle him. And you know, they didn't have written wills in those days. So Jacob gets the 2/3 of the inheritance. And Esau doesn't like that, of course. He threatens to kill Jacob. So Jacob fled to his uncle Laban, who was 3 days away, and just as crooked as Jacob was. He was a nasty guy. And there is where Jacob married his two cousins, Rachel and Leah. And, that's where that story goes. So then we skip ahead to Genesis 28. You know, you could really make a good soap opera out of these stories, couldn't you? Meanwhile, Jacob left Beersheba and traveled toward Haran. At sundown, he arrived at a good place to set up camp and stopped there for the night. Jacob found a stone to rest his head against and lay down to sleep. As he slept, he dreamed of a stairway that reached from the earth up to heaven, and he saw the angels of God going up and down the stairway. And that, folks, is where Led Zeppelin got the idea of the song Stairway to Heaven. And the song is not at all related to this passage. The song's about a greedy old woman who tries to buy everything. The song is really about greed, which isn't too far from this. But anyway, it's trivia. I thought you'd like to know that. In this story, this is a dream that Jacob has, and in this story he's called. And the passage says there's angels going up and down this stairway. That's not the best translation, but it's the best one we have. The real language says there were the sons of God going up and down the staircase. But anyway, it's set up to look like there are guardians coming down to earth, doing their thing, and then making a report going back up to heaven. And remember, this was just a dream that Jacob had. But I wonder how this thing got in the Bible, you know? Like, did Jacob then tell somebody about this and get written down? Or is this a couple generations later? I just wonder who wrote it down, but that's because I'm a Bible nerd and I wonder about those things. The story goes on. At the top of the stairway stood the Lord. He said, I am the Lord, the God of your grandfather Abraham, the God of your father Isaac. The ground you are lying on belongs to you. I'm giving it to you and your descendants. Your descendants will be as numerous as the dust of the earth. They will spread out in all directions, to the west and the east, to the north and the south. And all the families of the earth will be blessed through you and your descendants. See, God chose Jacob here because of who his father was and who his grandfather was. God chose Jacob even though he had just swindled his brother. God chose Jacob even though he's not a good guy. Just like he chooses you and me in spite of our inadequacies. And it goes on, what's more, I'm with you, and I will protect you wherever you go. One day I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I've finished giving you everything I have promised you. Now that land is the present-day nation of Israel, part of it anyway. Here he says he's going to be called, well, not in this passage, but in others it says Jacob was called to be a light to the nations, or his descendants were. And this was before the slavery in Egypt, long before that. Of course, that's before the slavery in Babylon. Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I wasn't even aware of it. But he was also afraid and said, what an awesome place this is. I hate that word awesome. What an awesome place this is. It's none other than the house of God, the very gateway to heaven. Now you read these two paragraphs and it sounds like the origins of Israeli nationalism. This is really kind of what they base it on. And you know that Jacob's name was later changed to Israel. But he believed Yahweh, he believed the Lord was in this place. The next morning, Jacob got up very early. He took the stone he had rested his head against and he set it upright as a memorial pillar. Then he poured olive oil all over it. He named that place Bethel, which means house of God, although it was previously called Luz. But now you know where the name Bethel comes from. This place is called Laketon Bethel, which could be translated as the house of God in Laketon Township. I don't know about you, but I find a great deal of comfort in this really strange passage. Comfort in the fact that God called Jacob to be his servant. Because I find great comfort in the fact that God could call me in spite of my stupidity. I found this slide this week. When God put a calling on your life, he already factored in your stupidity. And that really is comforting. You know, I think about that personally. According to my sister, I grew up in a highly dysfunctional home. I know that I was bullied a lot as a kid because I preferred books to football, and I got bullied a lot until I broke the quarterback's nose. But yeah, I was this nerd that preferred books over football. I was divorced at age 26. I've made lots of mistakes as a pastor. I've had to invent new mistakes to make. And I keep making new ones. But I am grateful that God factored in my stupidity when he let me become a pastor. And he is calling for your life too. He's factored in all your flaws, just like he did with Jacob. Your flaws will not be held against you by God because of what Jesus has done for you. Now, people will still hold you accountable. You know, when I was driving a UPS truck, if I only delivered half of the packages, it wouldn't be long at all and I'd be looking for a new job. They want, you know, there's still that human accountability. But God's calling in your life is particularly suited for you. Your bad actions are forgiven because of Jesus. Your flaws cannot be a reason for not serving. When people get nominated for elder or deacon, I've heard every excuse possible in the book. But your flaws are not a good excuse. I've heard it, I'm not spiritual enough. Okay, define spiritual. What's that? Somebody who's on their knees reciting the Lord's Prayer every 20 minutes? What is spiritual? You know? Well, I cheat on my taxes. Yeah, well, join the club on that, boy. Well, I haven't always been loyal to my spouse. Well, guess what? You're not alone there either. And I've even heard, well, I can't serve because I'm an ex-con. Well, guess what? God has all those things factored in. You are a flawed human, and you are accepted by God. So you can serve. Just get over yourself and get to it. That's the important thing. This is Laketon Bethel, the house of God in Laketon Township. And this house, like all houses, has flawed humans in it. Because that's the only kind of humans that God makes. We're all flawed. Some of us admit it, and some of us go to great lengths to hide it. As one of my daughters said to me a few months ago, God knows you're a hot mess. And that's the truth about all of us. And he loves us anyway. And he can still use us. So let's believe this good news and live in peace. Let's pray together. Lord, we're thankful that you put up with us, that you call us to serve you in spite of our flaws. You move us forward for all these things. So we ask that you make your calling clear in each of our lives and then push us to it. Amen.